Welcome to a brand new episode of the Zeets Podcast, where three friends join together with giant robots in order to become one being. As always, I am one of your robotic hosts, Zach. Joined with me is the AI one,
Zach.
And the purple one? Did he say you want to be the purple one with the giant sniper rifle?
No, that was
no,
me.
That was Zach.
Oh, that was Zach.
I like Miss Sombra.
Yeah.
Either the gold sniper one or the red one.
It's all good. So, for those of you that don't know what that reference is, Rooster Teeth has debuted their brand new animated series called Genlock, which is free to the public on roosterteeth.com. And
episode one is.
And then if you are a sponsor, you pay your dues and whatnot. Episode two is also available. We're big Rooster Teeth fans, and it's crazy to see how much they've evolved in the past 14 years they've been around.
15.
Yeah.
Almost 16.
It's ridiculous.
But we will talk about that later.
Yeah. First up is we are talking about the Metroid Prime 4 restarting development with the OG studio, Retro Studios. So, this broke Zach's heart, I feel like.
A little bit, but at the same time, it's like, okay, Nintendo went about this, like, so fucking well, where they're like, hey, everyone, we fucked up. So the whole Metroid Prime thing, it's going to be a while. We're restarting from scratch, which is also kind of insane that they're doing that. Like, they're not, like, moving assets or anything. They're like, no, we're literally restarting from scratch here.
I mean, it goes to the logic of that, like, hey, it's better to wait for a video game to come out than to have a broken video game be upon release.
I think the best quote I saw was... A good game will come out eventually.
Oh, yeah,
a bad game will be broken forever.
That's a Miyamoto quote, I think.
I don't know. It just rings true to so many games that had, like, rushed development processes. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at Mass Effect Andromeda, or even, like, the beginning pieces of The Division, like, The Division got better, but the player base just isn't there anymore. And I feel like the same problem is happening to Fallout 76.
Yeah, I mean, Fallout 76 is, like, oof. I'll be amazed if that game ever makes a comeback.
Yeah, so... Shinya Takahashi from Retro Studios stated, the current development progress has not reached the standards we seek in a sequel to Metroid Prime series, Takahashi said in a development update video posted to YouTube. Nintendo always strives for the highest quality in our games, and in development phase, we challenge ourselves and confront whether the game is living up to that quality on a daily basis. We have decided to re-examine the development structure itself and change it. Specifically, we have asked the producer, Kensuke Tanabe, to work in trust and collaboration with the studio that developed the original Metroid Prime series, Retro Studios, in the United States, and restart development from the beginning by collaborating and developing with Retro Studios. We believe we can make this game something that will meet our fans' expectations. We did not make this decision lightly. This change will essentially mean restarting development from the beginning, which you mentioned earlier, so the completion of the game will be delayed from our initial internal plan. We strongly recognize that this delay will come as a disappointment to many fans, Zach, who have been looking forward to the launch of Metroid Prime 4. Yeah, but like, Zach made the bigger deal.
I'm not as vocal about it.
I'm very excited about Metroid.
I've never been a big Metroid person. Like,
I think it's because back when I had my... Was it the Game Boy Advance... I think it was either the DS or the Game Boy Advance. There was a demo for one of the Metroid games, and I played that thing on repeat until I finally got the game, and then I played that game on repeat
over and over again. I played the ever-living shit out of Super Metroid.
It's probably one of the DS ports.
Probably. But yeah, so that Metroid port. Has like a very special place in my heart. So at the same time, there was a report I saw, I think from... it might have been GameSpot. I can't remember, though. I'm not going to point it out. But they were saying that apparently with whatever team they had originally on this, they were doing some weird... They were testing some weird ad hoc development thing, which, as a developer, that like screams like, oh, God, that is going to be a mess and a nightmare of development. Like, because apparently they had like multiple teams across the board where it's like, some of them were like, oh, yeah, everything's going great. And then other parts were literally on fire. It's just like, oh, shit.
That just reminds me of all of the terrible rumors we heard leading up to Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah. So I'm bummed that it's getting delayed, but I'm glad that we know why. And it's with a team that, like, apparently they, Retro actually put out a demo to Nintendo. It's like, hey, this is what we would do. And they're like, okay, we like this. Let's roll with this now.
So they could have easily been shitty about it and not said anything because they haven't given a release date. Else. They haven't given many details. They could have just kept it quiet, but they're being very transparent about it.
And I think it's the same thing that like CD Projekt Red did, where they just announced the game way too far in advance.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, hey guys, sorry here's about a
logo.
This.
I think my favorite article that's come out about it, though, has been like a joke article of Tanabe backtracking through Nintendo offices to find key that lets him continue Metroid for Prime 4 development.
It's crazy, just because right now we are in the final days before Kingdom Hearts. The demo...
We have...
I mean, this episode will be out that day, so...
Yeah. By the time this comes out, I've already been playing.
This is also episode 150. I hope you realize that.
We've been doing this for 150 weeks. Yes. We haven't missed a week. Which nope. This is it's too much. We need to quit.
6 more weeks. Rebrand. 3 years.
Nerds in tank tops. We just discussed deadlifts.
And what those deadlifts mean to us.
In 1 minute, it'll be 32 hours until Kingdom Hearts comes out.
We also have, the Anthem demo going on right now.
Yep.
Which had server issues, which probably good they're figuring it out now.
Yeah, I have that on the list to talk about.
And hey, all the VIP people are getting like an extra thing because of it.
Did they actually announce that?
Yeah, they're like, oh, hey, we're going to give you this extra like mech suit skin.
Okay, good.
So it's like, sorry about this.
We've also heard that Ninja Theory just announced a new project that's going to be released this year. I don't know if you guys saw that. It was just a Twitter statement.
Huh, interesting.
And I think one of the head level designers from Sony is coming to Xbox, and he's going to be working with one of the new the initiative. And he formerly worked at he did some Naughty Dog stuff, so he was part of the level design for those games. And it's just crazy just to be like, man, what is gaming now? Because I don't know, gaming used to be such a casual thing, and now it's just like a true and by far experience. I just think about the billions, hours I clocked in.
Billions of dollars in it now.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I'm sad, but I'm not... I'm probably, more excited now that it's going to be, the old team. Because before, it's like, yeah, it's some unknown team that we've never heard about. So, this at least... This probably is going to be actually, better for the project overall.
And at the same time, Nintendo's no stranger to delaying their games and making them better.
I mean, they never put a release date on Metroid Prime, so it's like, all right, lock yourself into something.
Like Super Smash Brawl, I think, got delayed 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Breath of the Wild got delayed to hell to where it came out 2 systems past when people thought it was going to.
But look how that turned out.
Yeah.
So Kingdom Hearts 3 got delayed.
Yeah, by Final Fantasy 15.
Still a good game. Episode Arden coming out this year. March. Maybe this March I'm actually going to play other games.
Is it weird that we're going to get a prologue episode and then that's it, we're done?
I know, it makes me
real sad. There's a prologue, there's no epilogue.
But that's like the conclusions of the story, I suppose.
The prologue.
It brings everything full circle. Yeah. Like with the Ultimate Edition update, they did a nice closed ending instead of Noctis gets raffle stomped by the other Kings of Lucius.
Are you ever gonna do like a Machete style of playing the game where it's like,
oh, probably
you go up to like, oh, okay, this is time for episode Prompto, I'm gonna play that now.
I feel like
so you start off with episode
Gladio, he's the first one to leave the party.
Well, I was thinking, in Arden, terms of timeline, I think you would probably bring in Arden once he gets introduced.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that way.
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Arden.
I do want to revisit Final Fantasy 15, especially with all the crazy updates they have added. Like, they had the Final Fantasy 14 crossover, which was really cool. And, I just want to kind of, dive back into that world one last time. I always want to go back to 13 also.
I know. I've been starting to get back into Odyssey. But then they just, with this whole DLC debacle thing, where they're like, oh, we're going to patch the ending to episode 2. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'm not going to be playing the DLC anytime soon.
I just decided I'm going to wait until all the DLC chapters are out and play it all at once.
Well, there's probably going to be a break between pack.
But I mean, like, playing the first Blade. I don't want to... Like, episode one. All right, cliffhanger. Cool. Let me wait till the second third of this DLC pack.
Yeah.
We're talking about Assassin's Creed, right?
Yes.
Okay, I thought we were talking about Mario Odyssey. I was like, fuck. Or a Lost Odyssey.
Yeah, Mario gets the first Blade. It's fucking weird. Has to start assassinating all the bosses.
Requesting.
Fuck you, Kami Koopa. Requesting Impache. Woohoo!
One really big thing that I'm excited about. That in the next coming months, there's going to be a Forza Horizon 4 and 3 duo pack that's going to be sold.
Interesting.
And I was like, ooh, shit. So I can play the Colorado map and then the Australia map.
So going back to Metroid for a second, I also saw another report that someone says that has, apparently they have inside info at Nintendo that the Metroid Prime...
My uncle works at Nintendo, and he told me if you hit the truck 100 times, Mew comes out.
It's you strength on the truck, duh.
But they said that the Metroid Prime Trilogy remake has already been done for Switch.
Fuck
so
yes.
It's like, all right, I wonder if they're just, if that's true, where the fuck is it?
It's also the people that have been like digging into the code of their Switches lately now that online is out and they've discovered that there's Super NES emulators on there.
Yep.
So I mean, whenever that rotation library.
That's not too surprising.
No. Maybe someday Super Mario RPG will come to the Switch.
Also, did you guys hear they're releasing a new Splatoon 2 demo that has a competitive ranked games?
No.
And it's a separate demo than the actual game because they want to test the durability of like the Splatoon arena kind of thing.
So kind of how like Ubisoft's using this SI playlist to test the waters of, hey, should we just implement these changes for everything?
Oh my god, I love the SI playlist.
Oh my god, I love it so much. Like, I'm having so much fun.
It takes a lot longer, but you do play with like...
The games are so much more satisfying.
Hardcore pros. Yeah, we lost our last game last night.
But it
I
was
didn't
like,
even feel bad.
It's like, oh, that was a good game.
I started to show you my best clip from last night. Oh, like, it's just like straight horror movie.
Was it... I still don't think anything's going to beat my last play of the game. The last kill where I did 2 360s.
Or Brandon's like magical double headshot to win the round. It's like, what the
bizarre.
Fuck?
Or me stealing your ace with a cap can trap suck.
I was okay with it.
Where's your zero kills MVP now, bitch?
So much fun.
Zero, like, 6-4.
Like either, I was like just going through like the Reddit, the subreddit, and like the Ubisoft or Rainbow Six Twitter, and just like everyone's like, please, for the love of God, keep this around.
And I hope that by the time it like becomes a regular thing that all the hardcore ranked people leave. Because there's some games where you just get your shit pushed
If they implemented this in ranked, that's where all the ranked people would play. But if there's a casual version of it, great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't even need to make it the main casual mode. Just make it like an optional mode.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I want to queue up for pro league rules or something.
Mm-hmm. And don't worry, ranked is still in beta.
Yeah.
After... 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching a very long video about it last night, and one guy, his definition or his explanation of for it was like this: like if you look at like how pro leagues played and how the regular games played, it doesn't match at all.
No,
it's like people like how are you ever gonna get people excited for like pro league or anything or get them invested in it when they play a completely different game?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Overwatch where it's like, oh, yeah, competitive is like slightly different, but you play competitive, you play the same way the pros play.
Yeah.
It's the same rules.
A lot more anchoring, a lot more holding corners, and it's crazy. Anyways.
That's fun.
Speaking of gaming, Anthem. So Steve was part of the VIP demo. How'd that go?
So Friday was a shit show.
I came home and you were just like, look, this is Anthem. It's a loading screen.
After you went to bed, I got in.
I hope it's all figured out next
for
week.
For about an hour, and then I got hit with an infinite loading screen, which is one of the problems a lot of people weren't experiencing.
The loading screen boss.
But other than that, I fucking loved it. Like, it was so much fun. And the Storm is my new baby.
Everybody seems so jazzed about the Storm.
That's the robot wizard.
Okay, that's what I was going to say.
They can fly for so much longer, can't they?
Well, they can float for longer. So, like, you have your jetpacks, you can fly, but then there's, like, floating in the air. Everyone can... Actually, no, I don't think Colossi can float.
Those are the Hulkbusters.
Yes. Okay. But everyone else can float, but the Storm, they're built to stay in the sky.
Hmm.
Like, all the classes have a shield. The Storm has a special shield that when you're in the air, the shield is amplified. So they actually, they encourage you to stay floating and shooting your magic everywhere.
Interesting.
Which is awesome, because like even just the starting base class of the storm, your right bumper is shooting ice shards that freeze the enemy, and left bumper is bringing thunder down upon them. Like a god.
I mean, so I'm waiting for the demo to come out, I guess, this week when, on Friday, when the public one drops. But one thing I noticed, like briefly, just watching you play it, some of those bosses seem like bullet sponges. I'm really worried they make a lot of enemies like that. I hope that's not the case.
In my time playing the demo, I've faced two bosses like that. One of them was like the end of a story chain, so it was like the final boss of that mission chain, and then another one was in what was called a stronghold, which is essentially like the Destiny version of a strike.
So in that same vein, were you able to play with anyone, or were you just solo?
I didn't play with friends, but they do have matchmaking.
Okay.
So like I would start up a mission and like a couple of them had started me off by myself, but then it's John Doe 123 has joined, and then
right,
he comes in and
the Monster helps. Hunter logic.
Yeah like, but okay. It's kind of like there's a drop in drop out element.
From interviews I've been seeing as well, they designed it intentionally like that, to where they didn't make the fights super complicated, so yeah, you didn't have to communicate.
Yeah, there's not like
good. No one talks on Xbox anymore.
There's not like elements of like, all right, I need to go over here, push this button. Meanwhile, this person needs to stand here on this plate and shoot that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not as complicated as Destiny. You just said
everything that I hate about Destiny.
Like, that stuff's okay if you have people to communicate with. When you're playing with randos, I did get a little frustrated because in the first mission, there are like three wheels that you have to spin into the right place, and there's like a tiny little hint on what's supposed to be, like the wheel's supposed to spin to. And I knew the hint, so I went there, spun it to the right position, flew over to another one, started spinning it. I look over, Randa walks up, bloop, touch, like, fuck.
Leave it alone.
And I run over and like try and spin it again, try and get over to the other one, spin it, but stop touching things.
Yeah.
But when I got into like a stronghold, the stronghold was so much fun, because, again, it's like a strike where you have stages of like, all right, here's your basic thing, like quiet this relic by collecting these orbs. But you have to kill enemies to get to the orbs. And at the very end, like, it's story-driven, and at the very end, there's a boss you have to kill. That one was a bullet sponge, but at the same time, it had interesting mechanics. Of like, it had weak points, and then when it got to a certain amount of health, it'd crawl away, and you have to fight waves of adds.
The way it seems to me is, like, from the little... I've watched a little bit of, like, how Final Fantasy XIV plays. And a lot of those bosses, you don't necessarily have to communicate. Like, there's a lot of like in-game prompts of like, hey, this thing's about to happen, like, yeah, get like, ready for it.
Like when the boss crawls away, like the ad wave will come from a certain direction, and they'll put like a note of like a, it's not like a blaring in your face like flashing light of come here and shoot, but it puts a little icon of ads are about to come from this cave, be careful. And then you know that when they come from that cave, the boss is going to jump out of that cave.
So it's very much like AI Tony Stark letting you all know everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
And flying is just so much fun. Like, I want to go in back in just to do free roam so I can fly around.
Yeah, that's what I've seen a lot on the Xbox subreddit, is just people flying around. It's like the same
a lot of people
from like Spider-Man, where you just swing around the city.
Yeah, a lot of people were pleased they fixed the flying controls, because apparently in the alpha they were pretty clunky. So it sounds like they fixed that.
The other thing I wish they would put a little more TLC into is the underwater movement.
Oh, really?
Because you can, like, your javelin eventually will
overheat. Yeah, I was reading that.
Unless you fly through, like, you can fly through a waterfall and that'll cool your suit down. You can keep flying, or you can go underwater and then it'll keep propelling you. Like, but when you're underwater, that's your only speed of movement. Hmm. It's not like you can just like slowly
like
wade around,
boost yourself around.
It's like, all right, I'm looking over here, I'm gonna slowly go over there. And when you're in a underwater area that's completely dark, it's kind of disorienting when you're like, all right, let me find the next area I need to go to.
Walls.
Okay, there, go.
That's cool.
But other than that, the movement seems very fluid and crisp, and the weapons, like, they have the generic weapon classes of like assault rifle, shotguns, LMGs, sniper rifles. What's weird though is the sniper rifle I got is a full auto sniper. It's like I'm they aiming down, and I was like, I was getting ready to like shoot one and do some damage. And it's like, all right, aim
they
down,
had that in Mass Effect.
Shot at the shot, and doop, 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 doop. Like, wasn't expecting that, all right.
Yeah, I mean, Mass Effect had burst sniper rifles, and I think they did have a full auto one as well, which is very strange.
Yeah, it was just, it wasn't what I was expecting. Like, coming from Destiny to Anthem, I was like, all right, this is going to be a one-shot sniper. Oh, no, I'm just holding down the trigger and it's shooting. Okay, this is interesting. But, you know, each class feels unique, too. Like, again, the Storm, I found myself using my magic abilities because they recharge a lot faster than I did my gun. Whereas the, I think it's the Ravager they give you right off the bat. Because you get the Ravager, and then when you get to level 12, you can pick one more Javelin to try out. And the Ravager seems more like the, kind of not like boots on the ground, but he seems more like the commando.
Yeah, the basic.
Like you're going to use your guns, he has a frag grenade, and he has another ability that like throws a AoE canister.
Your standard soldier class.
And then, you know, I had someone on my team who's a Colossus who he kept like running up to enemies and meleeing them, shooting with his auto cannon, which is
a shotgun.
Well, because the all the classes can wield the same weapons except for the Colossus can't use pistols because you got giant Hulk hands. So
kind of similar to how Mass Effect worked for a while as well, where it's like only certain classes can use certain weapons.
And then only the Colossus can use auto cannons, which are like essentially miniguns and grenade launchers because those are more built for a giant hulking behemoth.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I'm excited for the full release.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a shot next week. See if I I don't even know if we have enough time for it.
It's one of the things, like, if you like Destiny, give Anthem a try. Because it does feel like it's like a third-person Destiny, but a lot more, it seems a lot more fast-paced. Like, the movements seem a lot more quick, like the flying, the environments are a lot more wide open than that's just because you have the power of flight. They're not going to be like, all right, fly. Cool, you get 5 feet in the air. That's it.
And there's the skybox.
They do implement kind of like a skybox, but it's cool the way they do it. If you fly too high, you start hitting turbulence.
Oh, and that makes your suit
kind of spin out and gets you back down to normal flight level. Yeah, you can't. It's like if you fly too high, it's like, nope, winds are too strong. You can't get your suit up here.
That's cool.
Instead of like, oh, I hit a wall. It's the open sky, but I hit a wall. Aww.
So, yeah, no stalling on.
Yeah, Anthem, cool. Fun time. Good stuff, good shit. Except for full release. Play the demo next weekend if you're not part of the VIP. I was upset about Friday, but it turned... So, I saw someone... I don't know if they're like specifically with EA or they talked with someone with EA, but it wasn't that they didn't have the server capacity. Like, they didn't set the right amount of server capacity aside. They had an issue that completely popped up out of nowhere.
Which is like what happens.
Something they couldn't even have like predicted and prepped for.
Yeah.
That something just blew up and they're like, well, shit.
Right.
And again, kind of going back to like the Nintendo thing, they were very transparent through each of the steps of like, yes, we're having server problems. We're working on them diligently. A few hours later, it's like, all right, we've got the issue narrowed down. We're working on it. We'll let you know. All right, PC, PS4, your issue's good. We're still working on like the infinite loading bug and all that. Xbox, we've got your issue working on it. And then came out later, like, okay, everyone's good. Have fun. Like, they're keeping people updated instead of like, yeah, shit's broken. We'll let you know when everything's fixed.
Yeah. It's good they found that now for two, you know, and still instead of, you know, 2 weeks out when they launch it, it's like, oh, fuck, it's broken.
And, you know, I'm glad that they're giving people in the VIP demo like a freebie for the fuck up on Friday. And I'm okay that it's not an extra day because everyone's like, give us an extra day of gameplay. It's like, dude, there's only so much to do in the demo.
Yeah, yeah.
What is an extra day? Hours. I'd rather have something in the full release, even if it is just like a little sticker or something.
Mm-hmm.
But why do you need an extra day? Are you taking that long?
You have a fucking beta tester sticker.
So you can
he's get, a beta tester and a cheater.
You start at level 10 and you can get to level 15. How much time does it take you to get to level 15? Because I played all the story missions, one of them twice, did a stronghold, and I'm level 14.
I mean, I'm sure they like ramped up the XP too. instead of like how it'll be in the main game.
Yeah, kind of like how Destiny did it. It's like, yeah, you can get to level 5 and then import your level 5 character to the full game.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to play it, just because it's just every game that I've played in that realm of possibility, I just could not get into. I don't know.
I think it'll depend on it, how the single player works, too.
It seems like, again, like the best description I can give is it's like Destiny and the heyday of Mass Effect got together and made a baby.
Two things I just don't like.
Because it rings of like the A team of Mass Effect at BioWare. Like, all right, this is called Destiny. Make that. I'm like,
okay.
Mass Effect powers activate. it almost seems like storm abilities are your
Warlock.
No, not Warlock.
Synthetic.
Mass Effect mage.
Biotic.
Yeah, the biotic powers. And like a Colossus is your Grunt or your Rex. But you have other people controlling them, so you don't have to deal with AI logic of,
yeah,
like, I'm going to stand here. I'm getting shot at. You're good. I'm not going to do anything.
Donald, heal me. Do you think that's going to be in Kingdom Hearts 3, the Donald heal option?
See, Donald gets a bad rap. Yes, he fucking dies if you go over a difficulty of toddler. But when he's alive and you're hurt, he will heal you. Although the amount of people who are like, just cast Thunder instead of healing, that's happened maybe twice.
I think it's just a meme at this point.
Yeah, at the same time, I was like, Donald, just use a spell. Cure. I'm healed.
Yeah.
It's like, you have a cure spell too, champ.
No one wants to play the healer.
But yeah, I know the meme, and I've embraced it of, again,
Donald the Toddler, a.k.a. the Doddler.
Donald fucking explodes when a breeze of wind hits him.
And I just remember living with Erin, and she would scream constantly. Like, we had the PlayStation 3 in the living room, and my room was right next to it. And I would just hear Erin yelling about Donald, and I'm just like, I'm going to stay in my room. Again,
like, you go, like, anything over normal, and it's like, all right, boss fight, start. Donald's dead. Cool.
Fuck.
All right, Goofy up. He's dead, too. I got this. I'm the hero. Like, you can't rely on your allies on anything higher than normal. Like, I think the only thing I ever relied on them is the limit breaks. And you'd be like, heal, limit. Ah, all right, he's dead. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to eventually get my hands on Ace Combat. It's the only game I'm thinking about now. It's just...
pull off your Genlock tricks.
Dude, it's like everyone is like, you know, it's been literal year. Last Ace Combat game was on 360, and this game has been delayed for like 2 years. So a lot of people are like, this is a return to form of Ace Combat. Like, it has the perfect story, a perfect amount of sci-fi and everything. I'm just like, oh my God.
Give it to me.
Yeah. Put my idol girls on my jet. I'm not even kidding. Those are actual in-game skins.
I know, you told us.
All the Idolmaster girls. All right. Speaking of cool nerd stuff, Black Panther gets an Oscar nom for Best Picture. And didn't Spider-Verse for Best Animated?
Yeah. I saw a lot of arguments that people were like, Spider-Verse probably should have been Best Picture. In terms of like movie quality, Black Panther is good, but Spider-Verse is like, and I kind of tend to agree that it's just like a level above.
Yeah, I'm in that boat too, where I think Spider-Verse probably was the better film, just because like the story was a little more cohesive, the characters were more loving, and more so that I love those characters more. And it's, I feel like Black Panther is an amazing film, like, for, you know, the diverse audience, the and everything, but I don't know, I think Spider-Verse was something a little more special.
Yeah, I mean, it is the first superhero movie to get an Oscar Best Picture nomination.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good.
Yeah, that's a big first step.
Yeah, at the same time, no way in fucking hell does it win, unfortunately.
Nah. I think it's good that it got nominated, because especially the cultural impact it had.
Wakanda Forever.
But yeah, it's not going to win. And a lot of people are up in arms this year about all of the Best Picture nominations.
Like, what did you expect? It's the same. The Oscars are fucking paid for anyway. Like, the Best Picture nominations are always like paid, and because they know someone on the council or whatever, the voting committee.
It's it's the same thing that happens in politics. There are, fuck, I just had the word and I lost it.
Lobbyists?
Yes, lobbyists for the movies. It's not that
surprising,
groundbreaking. Yeah. And it's like, oh, look, this multi-billion dollar movie made it into every single category. I wonder why. Like, Make It Rain.
Suicide Squad.
Or it's like the animation thing. It's like they don't give a shit about animation. It's like, what's that? Ghibli? Okay, they win.
Did you hear Studio Ghibli is pumping out two more films? Miyazaki's really? Directing one of them, and then his son's directing the other.
Everybody keeps thinking Ghibli's like done. Like their studio's done. Like they haven't.
Well, it's just because Miyazaki retires every other year.
Yeah, but I mean, the studio still exists, but a lot of people are thinking that like
Miyazaki is the Brett Favre of anime at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people leaving Ghibli to go start their own studios. Like, oh shit, what's one of them that did? I mean, you have the studio for Your Name.
Well, it seems like
that's a director, but
a lot of not even like the anime studios, but like the art houses. Like, you don't need to belong to a huge art house anymore like
that. Studio Parrot? It's not Parrot.
Perot.
Parrot.
It's like how...
See, I feel like this isn't the right one.
Trigger has such like a very large in-house style, but like, it's...
Oh, what? Fuck? I know, I'm trying to think of it. What? La, 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 la. It was like the kind of Kiki's Delivery Service movie.
That was Ghibli, though.
No, it wasn't. It was Ghibli style.
Maria and the Witch's Flower?
Yes.
Oh. No, I thought you meant Kiki was.
I'm trying to think of the studio.
Like, that's a Ghibli film.
Because they're the studio who did this one, Mary and the Witch's Flower, were all Studio Ponoc, that's it. They all used to work for Ghibli.
Oh.
Or that's where they like learned everything. So they're like, a lot of people are calling them the successor of Ghibli now.
And but probably
Ghibli's still being around.
And they probably had the annual retirement party and thought, okay, maybe this time he's really retiring. Let's go make our own studio. I'm not retiring. Fuck. Eh.
Well, damn it. He's still doing stuff. Fine. We'll just make our own things.
But I mean, hot take. Not all Miyazaki movies are the best movies ever made.
No. Some of them are pretty underwhelming.
Some of them are masterpieces, I'll give you that. But the way everyone just jumps all over Miyazaki and be like, this is the greatest movie ever made. Not always, just because his name's attached to it.
Yeah, that's fair. It's like, I don't know, for a while, Gainax was like, oh yeah, shit.
They're the saviors of anime, and now it's Trigger.
Or, even if Trigger has to save anime from itself.
Yep.
With Gridman.
Crap, what was it? Like, it's the same studio that did Samurai Champloo. Like, they had a really great anime, and then they had a few stinkers along the way.
I'll look it up.
Like, Gangster, Samurai Champloo, and a few others. I don't know. Like, there are some turds among the sea of gold.
Said not every studio has a 100% perfect track record.
And this is why the manga comes first.
Again, Trigger had to save anime from itself.
Yeah. Fuck, who did Shamwart?
Was it that review video we watched Friday? No. Actually kind of raised a great point where really? It's like...
No, that can't be right. Who's the fucking studio?
So many anime... There's so many great anime this year, but there's not one that's going to become like the ultimate nostalgia boner that everyone has of like some like manga.
Manglobe. Yeah, Manglobe is like... They come out with something and then they just like disappear.
Yeah.
What was it? Yeah, Gangsta was the last thing they did.
And they didn't even finish that.
No, they did 12 episodes and that was the last thing they did in 2015.
Yeah.
Oh, I think they actually went under.
They did. I remember us talking about this and our 150 filed for bankruptcy episodes.
After getting in an estimated debt of 350 million yen. Nice.
That's not that bad.
350 million?
Yeah, it's only $3.5 million.
Only.
I mean, it's less than our government shutdown of 32 days with $6 billion.
Oh, we're goddamn.
Who's counting? Yeah, anyways. I don't know. Like, I loved all the 2018 anime. It's just like, yeah, none of these are going to be, like, huge nostalgia boners, I feel.
Well, because, again, there's so much out there that...
Yeah.
Not saying that... It's being
anime used to be special.
It's not being desensitized, but it honestly it did. It used to be that back in the days you'd before
get like maybe four series.
Before Crunchyroll and Funimation.
Back
streaming
in my day, we watched it on YouTube in three parts at 240p.
If you didn't take 2 hours to watch the Naruto versus Sasuke fight originally because you had to load up each part, it's like, all right, episode 25, one of three. It's like, all right, where's two of three?
All right, where's that like watch cartoons online website that has like a 3 million ads?
But yeah, like before all of that, when we only had Toonami, it's like anything Toonami brought, that was special. Like Gundam Wing, when I first saw Gundam Wing, I'm like, oh my god.
I think part of it is, yes, we have an abundance of it now. Like before, it was rare that we got anything imported, or like only like the hardcore people like found ways to watch it.
Because I mean, even Crunchyroll started off as a fan sub site before.
And I mean, you had those like big shows that everybody followed, and now it's like you kind of pick what you want to watch out of those.
Or it's there was like one breakout anime, and then everyone wanted to follow that same trope of like, here's
still
Monica,
happens.
Here's Yuki Yuna, here's Lyrical Girl.
Naming all of the magical girl shows?
All the deconstructed magical girls.
I also think like it's partially like, I think the baseline quality of shows has gone up.
Yeah.
Because I think like all these people who are creating shows now grew up with it.
Still watching trash sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's still trash. But I mean, like, I think the big shows of the year are all like, especially this year, it's like, it seems like the baseline quality has just gone up. So it's harder to find those like super special shows.
Yeah. We still need more idol shows. We only have like
three. Do we know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't there, there's Love Live, there was Zombieland,
Idol Master, Bang Dream.
What else? I know there's more.
K-On could be an idol show.
It hasn't released anything that's been released recently.
Pony Girls was technically an idol
show. Musume.
I don't know. I as much fun as I have with deconstructions, there's like, even like you said, like Tsunami was special. Like, oh, there's another new Gundam series. Great. It's like, who in the world has actually watched G and Requias? Like,
I thought you were about to say who has actually watched G Gundam. Like, I will fucking fight you right here.
Like that Gundam,
Neo America,
looks
right here,
really cool. But I don't know anyone that's actually watched that series. Like, I feel like a lot of people bypass that because Thunderbolt was going on at the same time, or like roughly around, mm-hmm. and Thunderbolt got way more praise because it was in Universal Century and it had a killer soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have Gundam Narrative, which is also Universal, and this one's getting such hype, but it's like...
They're doing a Fathom event for it.
Yeah, February 19th.
Yeah.
It's on Reddit, so... All right, moving forward.
Getting off track.
I closed my notes.
But I think also getting back on track.
I was actually going to bring this up because I was reading his letter pages. But Bendis teases Leviathan, DC's next big monumental event. Writer Brian Michael Bendis has teased Leviathan, a new event comic he's writing with artist Alex Maleev, which, holy shit. We all knew that when Bendis was going to DC, all of his friends were coming with him. And
what did he work on with Alex Maleev?
Everything.
Didn't he do Miles at some point with him?
He did a little bit of Miles, but he's mostly, most recently he did Infamous Iron Man, and he also did some regular Iron Man with Bendis. Like, again, you got Michael Gatos, David Mack, Alex Maleev,
Sarah Pacelli.
Pacelli stayed with Marvel. She's doing a Fantastic Four with Dan Slott. Omig, who did Powers with Bendis. Like, all of his Jinx World people are just marching right along Bendis, and I feel like Bendis is somewhat responsible for bringing like Milk Fed back over, or Milk Source.
Milk Fed, yeah. Milk Fed criminal masterminds.
So Leviathan actually refers to the criminal organization of the same name introduced in Grant Morrison's multi-year Batman run, culminating in Batman Inc. Bendis has incorporated Leviathan into recent issues of Superman and Action Comics, apparently building toward an event Bendis calls a monumental to the DC universe, saying that he and Alex Maleev have paused their creator-owned work to actually create the story. The special event story lets Alex do everything he's ever wanted to do at DC. No further details of the event have been disclosed. However, back in July of 2018, Bendis told Newsarama he had something cooking involving multiple DC spy organizations, including Leviathan, Checkmate, and Spiral, but didn't give out any other information. And I think part of this was like Bendis... There were like small teases where Bendis was hanging out with Scott Snyder. Bendis hung out with Tom King for a while. like all the DC writer summits where they're all coming together to create something super special. And I do hope it's actually an event that largely the first like three or four issues are done first before they start releasing, because I mean, we're still waiting on Doomsday Clock issue 9.
8 of 12.
9. And it gets delayed.
Well, we have 8 out.
Remember when it was going to take exactly a year for it all to come out, and then it was going to take 2 years because they went bi-monthly.
Yeah, it makes me sad because Gary Frank has been getting so much flack because, yeah, artist.
Is bi-monthly the right word?
Bi-monthly?
Yeah.
No, that, well, that'd be twice monthly.
Yeah. No, that's bi-weekly.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Gary Frank has been getting a lot of flack, so he's like, well, here's some pages that were cut. Sorry that it's not coming out, but we want to make sure everything is perfect. And it's just like, and I feel like that's largely one of the reasons why DC's universe right now is so weird, because
they've had to like fill in the gaps.
Yeah, because originally it was supposed to be all of your stories must end within 2 years, was a rumor that Dan Didio told all the writers. But now that the 2 year session is up, it's like, well, shit, what now? Because if you look at Nightwing, Tim Seeley was the writer, then Sam Humphries was the writer, then
Scott Lobdell.
Well, there's one before, there's two before Scott Lobdell. There's the guys that helped write Grayson, Kelly and Lanzig, who took over after Humphries for a brief period. Then you got Ben Percy, then you got Scott Lobdell, then Fabian Nicasia, then the guy who got disowned by DC for sexual harassment stuff. He worked on Border Tens, I think, for Vertigo. And now Dan Jurgens is writing it in April. So that's 8 writers on one title.
Damn.
Like, no one knows what they're doing with Nightwing right now. And it sucks, you know, that Ben Percy either left or got fired from the book because DC didn't like his pitch for the Dark Web that later got moved over to Batgirl, or like, they didn't want to go with Tom King's pitch where Tim was supposed to become the new Nightwing while Dick recovered, which I think would have been a fascinating story about two brothers. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just don't even want to read Nightwing. It's just sitting in a stack and I collect all the variants still. I'm that guy. I'm like, I want you to be good and I'm going to wait for you to be good to start reading you again.
Yep. That's how I am with Red Hood again. Like, it was good and then it wasn't again. Waiting for it to be good again. But Artemis
just came back. In the latest issue.
Did she? I have not been paying attention.
She has a mohawk now.
God. Please give the book to someone else.
I don't know.
Lobdell's been essentially on it for the last 8 years.
Yeah, more ever since or less. 2011?
Yeah, pretty much. Except for like one arc where Tynan jumped in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you're not caught up on Batman yet, but there's a nice little shout out to Tynan in it.
Yeah, I need to catch up. I just got done catching up on my Marvel titles. And, yeah, I'm like, well, don't really want to read Iron Man anymore because Bendis isn't on it. Still love Dan Slott, though. I don't know. I think my next thing that I'm working through is Super Sons. Our dishwasher is done.
Bim, bim. All
right. Now, going back, I'm excited for Bendis. Writes well.
Yeah, I mean, it's more Bendis free.
Yeah. And I think what we get here is in Crisis next week, which is the Blue and Gold Power Hour story.
Nice.
Shut your mouth, Steve. I don't want to hear it.
I've already said my thoughts, and
I don't want to hear it again.
You're not going to hear it again.
All right.
Just as long as you remember.
All right. So we're back to anime, and Steve has recently watched the new anime seasonal series, Bloom Into You.
It's actually from last season, but.
Last seasonal series, Bloom Into You.
It's how a lesbian, it's not just a lesbian, it's how a romance anime should be done. It was so heartbreaking and heartwarming, and I love all of them, and I want to protect them all, but Saika needs to back the fuck up. It's so good.
But they worked through all their issues at
the
end. So
what's the general synopsis for people that haven't heard of the series?
So it's kind of hard to give like a general synopsis because it's the classic like love blob. You can't even put it into a shape because there are no corners, because it's this person loves this person and that person loves someone else, but that person doesn't love them.
Oh shit, it's high school.
Yeah, it's essentially a very relatable romance story. Like, there's a character for everyone, and it goes into like some real issues, mostly concerning sexuality. Like Sayaka, the one who needs to step back up.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like how Bunny Girl focused a lot on like kind of mental health and like just kind of dealing with issues of
growing up. It focused more on the characters, their emotions, and how they go through their days, mm-hmm. instead of, you know, Citrus, where it's, I'm going to fuck my sister.
Let's be real.
Whether she wants to
or not. You cannot compare Citrus to Bloom and DU. Complete opposite ends of that spectrum.
Originally, it got put on the same thing of like, oh, it's a lesbian anime.
Hey, watch this.
Meanwhile, it's, let's put Citrus in this dark corner, because
you mean the trash can?
Talk about it.
They had some misunderstanding cases. Lots of misunderstanding.
And cry boners. Lots of cry boners.
But, so they, essentially it's, they start off with the main character, Yu, is talking about how she's never really loved anyone. Which, by the way, stop naming characters Yu. Because anytime it's like, oh, I love you, and I'm like, all right, do you mean like I love Y-O-U, or are you saying the character's name?
I bet in Japanese it sounds different.
It probably does, but you know, when you bring it to America, the translation doesn't really get there. Where it's like, hey, you, like, are they talking to the main character or just a random person?
It's different from my Persona, where it's just like, oh, hey, the character's you. It's also you. Ah, ha, ha, ha. It's kind of like a play on words.
Or in a Snow Crash, where the character is hero protagonist.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Snow Crash. Wait, is that the name of the show?
No, the book.
Oh.
Where you didn't believe me that they are called hero protagonists. They looked at the back like, wow, they're actually named that.
Yeah, I need to start reading it. Kayla needs to borrow it, and she'll finish it a lot sooner than I will. So many essays.
But anywho, so it's you talking about how she's never really fallen in love, never felt the fireworks or that floating feeling you get when you fall in love. And then she meets... holy shit, I'm playing on the name. I hate myself.
Toko?
Yes, Toko. Who talks about having, like, she has boys and even some girls who confess their love to her constantly, but she just says she's not in a wants to be in a relationship because turns out she feels the same way that you does. Never felt that fireworks. Then they meet, and Toko feels the fireworks, but you doesn't. Heartbreak number one. Because it was a very emotional moment when they're like, yes, yes, they're going to love each other.
No.
Fuck. But then, you know, they go through, like, Yu tries to essentially force herself to feel the same way, and then realizing that's not fair to her or Toko. But then, and I get another emotional moment where Toko's like, I'm still going to love you. Is that cool? Like, yeah, we cool. Lady bros.
Yeah.
And then Sayaka enters the picture. Who loves Toko, but is the unrequited love but best friend. Which actually got super deep with her, because they do a flashback of her in middle school, where she had a girl say she loves her to her, and then they went out for a while, and she realized that she actually likes girls. And then the girl...
Was that the bartender?
No, that's the... best friend with like the weird hair thing.
I jumped in at the last episode. Yeah, you jumped in the last episode while I was waiting for stuff,
which I'm gonna talk about in a second. But
I think I got the gist.
Well, when she was in like middle school, she was dating a girl, and then when that girl went into high school, they wound up breaking up, and the girl kind of did the it was all a phase sort of thing, and
it's never a phase, mom.
Well, yeah, it's like it's phase. You can't like. Dating a girl dating a girl is just weird, but Sayaka still liked girls, and they even touched on in a later episode of she ran into that girl again, and the girl's like, oh, I'm sorry if I kind of messed with your head and
gave you the wrong message,
made you like girls, and if you still like girls, I guess that's still on me because I pushed you into it. But if not, it's cool, I don't have to apologize because you're back to normal then. I was like, oh fuck. But it's okay, because Sayaka dropped the best mic drop moment ever. I'm going to Toko locking arms and like staring her down and be like, fuck now, bitch. And the realization of, oh, She's a lesbian.
That's a okay.
Mic drop. But it's there's such a good cast of characters that there is someone for almost everyone to relate to. Like, I found myself, there's a kid named Maki who he's kind of like the guy who never really fell in love but likes watching relationships from a distance, and you know, he's okay with helping people find their love if he never falls in love.
He's like the hype friend.
Kind of.
Like, yeah, you get that person. You deserve it.
And like, I found myself relating to him. Like, ah, there's my person. He's the one I can relate to. One character I did hate, though, and I think they made him this way. Like, there's another guy on the student council who just shouts. Always shouts. He's like that stereotypical guy who tries to hit on girls. And I'm like, fuck off. But I think they made him a trope on purpose.
Okay.
But the ending, it was a little weird, and you said, like, that's an interesting way to end it.
Yeah.
It makes sense if you watch the whole
show. I'm sure it does. I'm like I'm getting the end of this, and I don't know any context.
There is also, because the manga's still going on, but there is a potential endpoint. It's either this year or early next year.
Hmm.
That's from the writer himself. So there is the potential for a sequel.
Like an OVA or something.
But where they stopped it is like the best possible point they could have stopped it for a season.
Kind of leaving that open-ended.
Like they have...
I mean, it seems like
a little bit of resolution with the relationship. Of like you starting to fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
And Toko accepting herself because she hates the real her.
Who doesn't?
Because of so much backstory reason that broke my heart even more.
God, your one comment of, if she figures out how not to hate herself, let me know. It's like, God, it's too real.
But they had some good resolution of kind of keeping the relationship going, but if there is a sequel, they can easily pick it back up because they still have to do the school play. Because that they kind of made a big deal of that from episode 2. Like, yeah, we're going to do a school play through the whole season. Like, all right, we're rewriting the ending of the play. Like, but where's the play? I need Toko to love herself.
It's like, how was it last week where I just wanted to catch up on Citrus because I heard it finally ended? And I was just like, all right, do they get together? The anime ended way better. I'm glad we didn't have all the other unnecessary drama.
But they got married.
Yeah, but there was so much leading up to it. Like, oh my god, the 1 year time skip, and then May is getting married to someone else because she wants to break everything off with Yuzu because of how wrong and immoral their relationship is.
I wonder why it's wrong and immoral, May. Who started that, huh? Who assaulted their sister first?
Just saying. It's a great ending, though. I was really happy for the gays.
At the same time, I don't hate Citrus. It's that
we just recognize that
it's the dark part of the heart that I'm like, I love it, but
it's that
why?
It's the train wreck effect.
It's like, but I feel gross loving it.
Well, it's the train wreck versus the trash. Like, there is trashy things. Like, I've given up on Riverdale. I just can't do it anymore.
That's the point where you spoil the episode for me, but that's cool.
Saying Archie's alive.
Yeah.
That's it. He got mauled by a bear.
You were going to say more if I didn't yell at you.
No, I just said he got mauled by a bear and he lived. That was all I was going to say.
You were going to say more and I yelled at you.
Nah, I'm over it.
Damn show.
All right, I also got you into K-On.
It's purity.
So I like how Zach just jumps in every four episodes. It's traditional Zach things.
Because you get home so much earlier than I do.
I know.
What are we supposed to do about that?
I don't know. Steve and I usually have a show, and then you jump in later. I don't know. K-On's just too pure.
It is.
And we finally get my favorite character in the series, Azusa. She's amazing.
Azuka.
Azunyan. Alrighty. Azusa, we can't speak Japanese anymore.
Azuka.
Alright, so now to jump over. By the way, did you guys see the picture of Lobo?
Yeah.
That got released.
And from what?
From Krypton. He looks absolutely perfect. And he has his crotch skull. And according to Kinda Funny Best Friend, Cameron Cuff, who also plays crap, I can't remember what character he plays in Krypton. He's the main character. He says, imagine, if you will, that the Joker and Wolverine had a baby, and they raised this baby on a steady diet of Bane's venom, glam metal, and murder. That's Lobo. And Lobo just looks so perfect.
The main man.
I want him to pull a Macho Man. Just kind of, oh yeah! The main man is here.
I mean, they pretty much done Young Justice, which is amazing.
Lobo is ready.
They did that a bit in Justice League. Justice League, because when they all thought Superman died against Toy Master, but he got sense of the future. Anyways, so this week, Rooster Teeth's new hit series, Genlock, came out. It's their, it's not even spiritual successor or successor to Ruby, since that's still going, but it's their next big anime-esque production that's been in development for, I think they said, like 3 years. And
it's Gray Haddock's dream to create a mecha show.
And it's a love letter to all mech shows, yeah. Essentially.
It's got hints of Evangelion, hints of Gundam.
Mostly Gundam. A little bit of Robotech.
I mean, everyone's comparing the group to the Power Rangers.
Because already. They're different colors.
I'm telling you, season finale, they pull a Shogun Megazord. Two of them become arms, two of them become legs. Chase becomes the main body. A crane swoops in out of nowhere to make the helmet.
Yeah,
by their powers combined, they make the Voltron Megazord.
So for those people that don't know, this is... so it is a mech show, but it's also, in terms of budget and everything else, this is the most expensive thing Rooster Teeth has ever made. They're also...
The shows.
They're working with Michael B. Jordan's production company.
So in the show, they have, you know, they have regular Rooster Teeth personalities like Miles Luna, Chad...
Chad James.
Blaine Gibson, correct, if he comes back.
Blurred Gibson.
There's also the big crazy names that were a bit of a draw-in for people. You got Michael B. Jordan headlining the show as Julian Chase. You got
Maisie Williams,
David Tennant,
Dakota Fanning,
the original Cowboy Bebop himself.
It's the Japanese voice actor for Spike Spiegel.
So you keep referring it to the original Cowboy Bebop.
He is.
No.
The ship was the Bebop.
I don't know.
Spike Spiegel was the main character. He wasn't the ship. He didn't go up to a recording booth and really go, cool, ship noises.
Can you imagine, though? That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing, but he wasn't Cowboy Bebop. He wasn't Bebop. He was Spike Spiegel.
There was a lot of really cool, like, a lot of people on the Rooster Teeth subreddit were like, I'm blown away.
Also, Monica Rial, she doesn't get enough credit. Is everyone focuses.
Her part's pretty small so far, but she is important.
I don't know, man.
Everyone focuses on the Michael B's and the David Tennants.
I mean, they're kind of like they've had the most screen time so far, second to Dakota Fanning.
I think Monica Rell's had.
She's had pretty good. She's been.
She's had more time than Macy Williams on screen. But she deserves credit too.
Yeah,
she's a fantastic voice actress, a great person. Had the honor of meeting her at last DCC.
Nice.
The final DCC. Since we're down the Terra Pop Culture Con.
DPCC.
Because fuck San Diego and their trademarks.
Yeah. But yeah, I was super jazzed about it. I've seen some echoes of this online of it did seem like the plot was at least early on a little underdeveloped in terms of like giving you like the grand scope of here's the world, is more of here's the future.
And Florida's now, gone.
Yeah, Florida's gone. And then here's this.
Florida's gone. Texas is six separate states.
Here's
Rainbow
this,
Six Siege is still alive.
Siege still lives.
Here's this evil other faction. Yeah, coming in and just attacking everyone. Like, I really hope we get an explanation of why they're doing all of this, please.
I feel like the big thing, I think they're going almost trigger-esque in story development where it's like, let's get you hooked. And then we give you exposition.
That's what I hope.
I honestly see it more as like a original Star Wars trilogy. They told us nothing about the Empire in the beginning.
True.
But the trade regulations.
Trade regulations didn't exist in A New Hope.
I know.
But they just threw you in of, here's your main hero. Like, yes, there's the Empire, there's the Rebels. You know who the bad guys are, really.
You know who the bad guys are because they killed your problematic favorite. Rest in peace, Razzle Dazzle.
I thought you were going to talk about they burned your family's moisture farm to the ground.
I mean, yeah, that shows the true evil of the Empire, but we all know Donald Faison did not mean to do that.
I was going to say, shout out to you, Robot Chicken, where Donald Faison Stormtrooper knocked over a candle in the bathroom.
We gotta go.
It's like, but the cookies, we gotta go! Rest in peace, Beru. And yeah. Uncle Owen.
And it's, like, again, I remember just every single preview thing where people were like, oh, the stuttery frames, it looks like Dragon Prince, but worse. But it's like, once you're in that world... You don't notice.
I noticed no stuttering frames while we were actually watching it. Like, it was just,
everything was
it was very smooth.
And a lot of people said, a lot of people started getting their like 21:9 ratio monitors out to watch it because that's the like true and true anime esque thing that they're going for.
Really? 21:9 is the aspect ratio they wanted? Oh, that was
because it's the old school anime.
That would be 4:3 though.
Yeah, that's how old anime was. Like yeah, standard 20, def anime.
But 21:9 is not 4:3.
I don't know. But a lot of people were watching it on that.
16:9 or no, 12:9 if anything.
Yeah.
If you scaled
it. If that even exists, which it doesn't.
But I mean, we watched it on a 55-inch 4K TV and
nothing.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And it's just very fluid compared to, like, no offense to Dragon Prince or anything.
Well, but no, Dragon Prince is not fluid.
Yeah, it was way more fluid than that. Yeah. And it's not even all drawn by like the robot thing. There's a lot of like human survival, human condition things that like Gundam was famous for. It's like, yeah, here's the cool robot scenes, but Amuro is a 16-year-old kid and now he's fucked up for the rest of his life. Camille is a 14-year-old kid and that's not a girl's name. Here's Kira. Kira's majorly fucked by the end of the Gundam scene.
Yeah, I think, and I imagine we're going to get that. If what I'm thinking Blaine's character is he's going to be their Char, essentially. That's always what I hope.
Clone.
That's what I hope is
he's the
case.
Blonde ace pilot.
Oh my God. No, I'm imagining now like a scene with like Amuro and Char where it's like Char and you just cut to Blaine, just a potato. Like, it's like somehow his brain is still controlling the robot.
He genlocked so hard.
He's gemlocked so hard, his brain kind of locked up.
And I'm glad that they, like, you know, the first episode was really great just to introduce the world to you. Like, here's the world 2060. Here's the technology we have.
2038.
No, it was 2068.
Yeah.
Because 4 years later, they're 2060.
Because we made the joke they're playing Rainbow Six Siege 40 years later.
I thought it was no, 2038. No, it's 2068. It's way in the future.
Yeah. But, like, there's so much there, and then it's like, oh yeah, we still play retro jazz and, you know, YOLO. And now they're like, all right, here's episode two, here's the synopsis of the Genlocks.
Looking back at, he didn't YOLO, he was just singing the song.
Yeah. But
but in the context, it's like, you only live once, like, did you just fucking YOLO? Oh no, he's singing the song. Okay.
Yeah, you said it as he was finishing the rest of the quote. And now we have the exposition of the Genlocks, and like, Pacific Rim-ish.
Episode three is definitely going to be like the exposition of this is how all this technology fucking works,
especially since they brought up the fact that the yellow pilot was a former member of the Union. So I feel like she's gonna be the big exposition piece for this episode.
Like what, or like even in the beginning when there's those group of civilians that are like show the symbols like, oh, they defected, why, like what is this evil, I mean, they are the evil empire, but it's like, what is their purpose? What are they trying to do other than just take control?
But like, what if the bad guys are just misunderstood and then they destroy the Statue of Liberty? It's like, oh, nope, never mind.
Well, the Statue of Liberty was more of like an accident bumping. I thought they were just going to do this trope of it walks up, bitch slaps the Statue of Liberty and keeps walking. But it was more like, boop. But they became a trope.
Yeah. That, God, the fucking intro scene is so hype though.
Mm-hmm.
Just like seeing all the mechs we're going to get eventually in action, and that is just like,
well, especially since so we only have their basic arm frame. It's the tradition of all mech anime where it's like,
here's the super powered mode. We got to get there though.
It's like, all right, here's the Strike Gundam. Okay, you're going out into space. Strike Ale. Here's the sword.
Mm-hmm. And again, if Steve's dream of just them all combining Voltron style.
Voltron or Shogun Megazord? Because let's remember, the Shogun Megazord was originally four mecha that two of them transformed into arms, two transformed into legs, and one formed the head and body. If that happens, Grey Haddock, I will worship at your altar.
Yeah. It's still, it's definitely worth it, and I'm excited to see what they do with it.
It's so crazy that their animation department has grown from one person named Monty Ohm to, all right, here's the 2D animation team, here's the Ruby team, here's the Genlock team. Let's not forget Spike Face that's going to be coming out as a 2D animation. You know what? Ruby Chibi team's now a separate part of Ruby. And it's just like, holy crap, this company is so huge. No wonder the animation department has their own building.
Well, on the latest Always Open with Greg Miller, we were talking about coming to visit Rooster Teeth for the first time right after the Gauntlet. And the animation department was Monty at a desk with a cot in the corner where he slept. It's like, yep, this is where I do all the mocap and animation. And now he walks to the animation department and I'm like, who the fuck are you?
Carrie! Yeah, that was one of my favorite jokes too. But, like, it's crazy because, again, these were five guys working out of a spare bedroom making Red versus Blue to what they are now. Like, I love listening to the founders talk and just like, yeah, you know, someone actually asked me if I worked here the other day. I'm like, but you're Jeff. Like, everyone should know who you are.
You're Geoff Ramsey.
Like, I would love to go to RTX again, but like, maybe next year I would go. If they announced David Tennant, I would go. But it's like, wait for like the VIP stuff and just like, I want to meet Jeff.
Jeff.
He's my hero. Anyways. Genlock's awesome. You should go check out the first episode for free on roosterteeth.com. Again, we're not sponsored by anyone, so like, please just watch the animation or the intro. If you don't get hyped by the intro, watch the show.
Anyways. So just the beginning thing of them floating through the air and changing outfits is like the most hype part of that thing to me.
That's the most Power Rangers thing possible. It's gonna be great. Can't wait. All right, what's next, Zach?
More Young Justice, because we got the last four episodes for 6 months.
Also, last week's three episodes because we didn't talk about them because we didn't watch them in time.
Shit, yeah. Okay, so
there is so much that happened.
So we got episodes, what is that? 9, 7, 8, 9. Okay, so 7 through 13.
It's so good.
This show is literally everything we've ever wanted.
And again, more and more. Like, I remember how I was like, hang on, guys, I got this huge thing, this bombshell, and it just paid off immediately. I'm like, well, shit, that wasn't really a bombshell anymore.
And then I made a joke that made you almost cry, and then it happened, and then you cried.
Yeah.
So should we just say this is spoilers? All right,
we're going to enter spoilers in 3, longstanding Z2 podcast tradition, where I mention who dies in 2, and spoilers are free in 1. Oh, my God, Halo died and came back to life again.
Not only once.
Well, between 7 and 13?
Yeah, only once.
Only once.
That's right. She didn't die the second time. We thought she was going to die from Cyborg, but she didn't.
Ocean Master died instead.
Lobo's Pinky got murdered.
Yep. Oh, my God. Slobo, though.
Or Crush.
But Slobo. Because this is their chance to have all of the original Young Justice. Because we got Connor, Cassie, Tim, Bart, and then Slobo.
So we're joking about it. Like, yeah, cut off Pinky. Like, what if we get Slobo? And then it shows the ending of the Pinky mutating nubs.
Yeah, Peter David. So Slobo was originally a Lobo clone who was too afraid because, like, Lobo's blood itself can regenerate, and it created, like, an army of Lobos, and one of them killed all of the others. That one grew up to be Lobo again, and then Slobo went to hide inside of the Young Justice ship at the time.
Interesting.
And then he died later, but... Who didn't?
Yeah, well, I mean, these episodes was like, here's some giant exposition of where this story is fucking going for the next 13 episodes.
Yeah, I think, so Greg talked about when he and Brandon got greenlit again for season 3, they locked themselves in a room and then just laid out the entire timeline, changing smaller things, reincorporating a lot of the new DC universe into the show to get characters like...
Fucking Harper Row.
Yeah.
An orphan.
Yeah, Jonathan Kent.
That was the greatest thing.
The joke of. So yeah, the setup of.
I think it was episode 8.
Yeah, where all of the super kids have a play date.
Which is so cool that they're all on such great terms.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like all of the, even ones you wouldn't expect. Like Will comes out of hiding to have Leanne have a play date with the Tornado Twins.
Mm-hmm. Amistad, who's Karen's child with Mal. You got
little baby Archer. Is it Archer?
Arthur.
Oh yeah, Arthur Jr. Yeah, AJ.
Right, I thought she said like Arthur or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Probably. Some sort of Atlantean name.
Bart's there just calling him
calling Don Dad. And it's like, don't call him Dad. Sorry, Grandma. Don't call me Grandma.
Or you also got Red Tornado coming with his adopted daughter. And I was just like, holy shit, of all the D-list random ass things. And I guess in one of the behind-the-scenes interviews I watched with Brandon and Greg, they also said that the time skips were always necessary because that's the way, like, instead of, like, you know, how Teen Titans was, here's our characters, let's watch them develop slowly. It's their chance to explore these different characters at different stages in their life. Dick Grayson in season 1, I don't want to be Batman. Dick Grayson season 2 is literally Batman. Dick Grayson season 3 is now his own person outside of the realm of Batman Robin.
I would say he's not necessarily his own person yet. I think he's in that transition of I'm becoming my own person, but I'm still going back to Batman ways every now and again.
Is the logic of like, I don't want to lead a team anymore, which was the beginning of season 3. And now season 3 is like, I'm leading a team again. Mm-hmm. Great. And it's really cool because like the roster has expanded so much. I know a lot of people are upset that the main focus is no longer around the core 7 of Young Justice, but we get to explore how big this universe is with Batman's outsiders, Dick's outsiders, the team that was the original Young Justice squad. And I'm really hoping we get an actual Justice League episode because I want to see Calder actually like
be Aquaman.
Yeah. There's not, so not much. Just
have him show and be like, yes, the Justice League did this. Like, show don't
tell. I mean, the whole point, the main focus on the show so far has been let's halt this meta-human trafficking ring.
Whoa, that's meanwhile, like a huge metaphor for something.
Meanwhile, all the bullshit that's going on around it.
But yeah, I think my mutant powers of I'm stealing Zach's power of being able to bend reality. It's the Playdate episode where like yeah, there's like 4 more people coming. Like, who could it be? Like,
oh my
what if
God.
Lois just shows what up with John and you just stare me down?
Oh, hey, Lois. I'm so glad you could bring Jonathan by.
I cried.
You screamed.
Like my powers.
Well, it's like.
And that whole episode with Ocean Master watching them, like, I just want all of the super wives to beat the ever living shit out of him.
I didn't even want the super wives to beat the shit out of him. I wanted the super kids to beat the shit out of him. Just like him go next door and be like, time to fuck shit up. Like,
one blast from this will kill you. Oh, fuck. I can't do this.
Are those 2 tiny speedsters? Wait, is that a super baby?
Like,
does that baby have a bow and arrow?
Who was it? There was that scene in season 2 where they're throwing, like, the bridal shower.
Yeah.
And it's bridal shower. Yeah, like, it's so cool because it's like, oh, here's all the badass ladies to take down whatever D-list character that was. And
I think I want to say it's not Batroc, but like the equivalent of Batroc for DC.
I don't remember. Season 2. But like Greg even mentioned, it's like, yeah, you know, there's actually supposed to be more characters there. Like Troya was supposed to be there. Mary Marvel was supposed to be there. And I'm like, what? Yeah, we just didn't get time and we didn't get permission. But now it's like, fuck it. Here's all of these characters.
He literally has the power to bring in anyone he wants.
Well, and especially with this last episode, Nightmare Monkeys.
Oh my God, that was such a cool episode.
And a lot of people were like, oh, the Teen Titans Go segment lasted too long. I'm like, no, but that was Beast Boy's brain.
Fucking great.
And it's like, oh, here's the Doom Patrol. And it's like, a lot of people were kind of bummed because it's like, oh, we got Doom Patrol on screen, but they're all dead already. And it's like, yeah, but if you look at the tie-in comic. You got Casey Brink and Sam, and then they actually make that appearance again in this episode, and it's just like,
as paramedics.
Oh, shit.
It's like, oh shit.
It's Gerard Way's young animal right there. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh well, if Casey Brink exists, that means Danny the Ambulance, who is her father, exists. And that means they could bring back the Doom Patrol, like Robot Man being in the Euroverse, or Negative Man not remembering who he is, or
Crazy
Jane.
I mean, yes, they made the joke of we're off to go die, but who knows, maybe they just got sucked into that universe, like you're saying.
It was Captain Cold planning a bank robbery.
Yeah.
Which was right next door to the restaurant they were having brunch at.
So there's so much, and again, like everyone keeps saying Young Justice is the love letter to the DC universe, and it truly is. It's like the only series that has such an expansive history, but dating back to 50,000 years ago.
And they're writing it together so well. Mm-hmm. Like, the way everything's fluid, it's just like, okay, I don't know why Harper's in Happy Harbor, but the way you just incorporated her into that, fucking great. Now yeah, if she shows
it's
up
the
in
mean
a
Mean Girl sequence.
If she fucking shows up in a Bluebird outfit, I'm gonna lose my mind.
It's like she's one of Batman's secret operatives.
Exactly. Like, what if she's part of that squad?
She was a plant to watch over Halo and Forager.
Because
Fred Bug with two G's.
Yes, Fred.
Like, as ridiculous as it is, it's like, oh cool, Batman split off. Who would have saw that coming? Oh cool, all of Batman's squad split off. But it's another secret op that no one knew about. Like, Wonder Woman's there as the Justice League in space, yeah. The Odyssey, if you will. And then mm-hmm. you have Aquaman and Calder, and then Dick's there with Barbara and Batman, and it shows that they're all secretly working together. It's been part of a larger conspiracy.
But again, going back to my point, why did no one else in the Justice League, because yes, Wonder Woman was in on it, how did no one else call Batman out on his bullshit? Like, Canary, when, like, Ollie quit, like, yeah, whatever, that was a shot, but Batman quits, and then he takes his team with him, like, fuck you doing, Batman?
What do you mean, Plastic Man, Katana, all left? Oh, God. But there's so many cool things. Like, again, it's a blend of the main universe with this new thing. Like, I'm so glad that people keep mentioning. Yeah, Garfield was part of the Doom Patrol. That's something that one ever remembers.
Fucking Mento is there.
So they adopted him after his mom died, and then they died.
Yeah,
they had to make a musical number about how they died.
But. And that's so cool, too, because it gives us like the comprehensive history of Garfield. It's like, his mom died. Okay, I'm going to go live with McGann. And then he goes to live with the Doom Patrol. And then he goes back to McGann. And then his stepdad comes back, or Mento comes back to take him away. And it's just like, wow, there's so much underlying history. And I love, like, Queen Perdita, who Wally saved in the episode Cold Hearted, is his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And, like, this Beast Boy is more canonical to that New 52 version of Beast Boy, where he is the Hollywood superstar that he always wanted to be, the Instagram influencer. And even more so, it's like, they flat out said, it's like, do you ever wonder why your powers break the conservation of mass? And it's like, holy shit, is he an avatar of the red? Is that the monkey god Haddock, I think it is, who Beast Boy turned into once to defeat another demon? Like, there's so much crazy things. And then having Wally be there, like,
which also brings up so many fucking questions, because he's the only one who doesn't die in that dream sequence. Like, you have fucking Ted Kord, Wally West, Jason Todd, Tula, all of them die. And then, yeah, fucking Wally is just there.
It's my favorite thing. And, like, again, it's the repetitive nature of, like, oh, they're gone, Torque. Oh, they're gone, Torque. And it's like, huh, I wonder how I'm going to die. It's just like, is that, like, that has to be, everyone's
to
speculating
something
larger.
Right?
Like, yeah, granted, the Speed Force may not exist in this universe because everything's a metagene, but
I think that one, like, thinking about it is, it's more Beast Boy doesn't understand how Wally died.
Like, maybe.
He probably understands how Tula died, understands how Jason died, Ted died, but doesn't really understand the science of Wally dying, or doesn't accept that Wally's really dead.
And if you think about it, Beast Boy, when he was in the team in season 2, he was the blend of Wally and Dick's personalities. He used all of Dick's not words, like Aster, Whelmed, and
everything
else.
And now everybody uses.
He was also the one who kept up Wally's tradition of keeping souvenirs from every single mission. Like, those were his Justice League parents.
Yeah.
And, oh God, there's just so many cool things. Like, again, if we get another time skip, we're going to have a team that has Leon, Damian, Jonathan, Amistad, like
the Tornado Twins.
It's going to be wild to have all of this.
And we're even skipping over the whole Halo and Cyborg
the mother box versus father box.
So it's like, oh, okay. So yeah, it was exactly as we expected. The mother box just inhabited an empty vessel and now is growing a personality.
Especially since like Superboy in episode one went into so much details, like, yeah, it was murdered. And it's like, it's a living being. And it's like, got it.
Okay.
And I think this is a really cool adaptation of Victor Stone Cyborg, because it's him being a father box instead of the mother box. So it's like a New 52 adaptation, but now he's given his own different core style personality, acting like a horror movie and just like hyper aggro. So he's very similar to Geo-Force in that fashion. Like, it's so cool. Just all the neat little things they're borrowing, lending. Like, I think Sam Humphries and James Tynan said it best on like the Young Justice Enhanced, where they're doing commentary for each episode. It's like, yeah, this is like the coolest version of Elseworlds. Like, this is the love letter. Mm-hmm. Like,
and also, Greg, I know you're not listening, but for the love of God, make fucking Tara a triple agent. Don't Judas contract us again. We don't need this.
My favorite comment from the subreddit was like, oh, Tara's there. She's going to betray the team. Tara betrays the team. I was rooting for you, and you failed me. And like, all that of our expectations. That was how I was
the whole fucking time. I'm like, don't contact Slade. Don't talk. God damn it, there's Slade.
Hey, daddy.
But let's be real. When has Tara been on screen and not worked with Slade?
That's my point. You could have done something different.
This is the third adaptation of Judas Contract.
It's like, that's what I'm hoping. It's like, no, she's doing it to expose the League of Shadows. No. And that's what I want it to be. But
the only reasonable thing I could see is she was one of the first victims of Granny Goodness's goggles. Because they go over the whole thing of when Garfield put them on, since he's a meta, like, it read that, saw, and gave him the message and brainwashed him to go do whatever task they wanted to, or go to the metahuman trafficking spot, but then the monkey god fought back. So maybe she got injected and mind controlled, and that's what they're gonna have to break.
I can only hope.
Just about to break.
We don't need another version of Judas Contract. Like,
but have we ever? So like, Teen Titans did it great because you're actually sympathetic towards her. Tara actually had a redemption arc.
Yeah.
And then the New 52 animated one just showed Tara's evil all along. Like, I kind of want a true and true adaptation of this where she is not redeemable. She has no redeeming quality. She cannot be better. And yeah, that's going to break Geo-Force, but like, it'll be interesting to see what they do with her, because I mean, the show does break a lot of expectations. Like, the moment Artemis was just like, the fuck, and then she was fine. Or even like Dick Grayson doing all of the Dick Grayson things, like, you're surprised by it, but it's like, oh no, but that's really Dick Grayson.
It's like the whole, it's essentially just a giant game of chess between the League of Shadows, the Light, and Batman's team, and all his sub teams. It's just like, they're just trying to outsmart each other of like, how much do they each know about each other?
It's like a giant game of, I know that you know that I know that you know that he knows that she knows.
But none of us actually know how much each other know.
And I think that's like what I brought up to Steve. That's one of the scariest things. I'm like, what did Queen Bee call Nightwing? Grayson. What's the problem with that, Steve?
Is that an Ocean Master knew where the super kids had their play dates and where all of the wives would be? But again, like, you can say, like, yes, that's problematic, but at the same time, the Light knows that's the last line you can ever fucking cross. Yeah. Because look at Injustice.
That is the nuclear option.
When Joker killed Lois and their unborn child, what happened to Superman? He went batshit insane and murdered everyone. And the Light knows, like, all right, if we kill Superman's family, Aquaman's family, the Flash's family, all of these families.
You better have a fucking way to back this up.
Like, we're going to absolute, we're all going to die war.
Yeah. It's interesting just because it's like, yeah, the Justice League knows the light exists and they know who's in the light. And it seems almost like a large part of the season is Vandal Savage kind of like, here's the start of his story. Here's where it's going to lead up to. Just how centered Vandal has been in all of this. Because even looking at all the political figures he was Marduk, the Egyptian god. He was also Sun Tzu. He was Genghis Khan. Like, he's been alive. He's been around so long that ultimately, and he even said that the light only exists at different portions in time. The light only comes out when they are needed. So it's like, oh shit. What is the light doing now? Because we had the original incarnation where he was Marduk, and then he has Naboo and other people, and it's just like, this is really fascinating.
Also, how long until we get Secret Six?
We have Scandal.
I know. I do think we're at the point, like, the light came out because it's needed, because I think Earth, they're saying Earth is to that point of Darkseid and Vandal Savage's deal of there's enough metahumans.
98% of the world's metahumans are in the United States.
But there's enough of them that Darks could be like, all right, cool, let's fight. Because again, apparently all of this, all the light's doing, and the Earth as it is right now, is all because Darkseid and Vandal Savage made a bet that Vandal Savage is going to fuck everybody, literally, to make more metas, so that Darkseid could come back and have the best fight of his life.
Also, shout out to Starro. Or possess
everyone for the... anti-life.
Well, because he said that, like they said, that Darkseid made the deal because he wanted a planet worth conquering.
Yeah.
And he wanted the Earth filled with metas so that there would be a good enough fight that it would be worth conquering Earth.
Yeah. Shout out to Starro. Zach was real happy about that.
Not Starbro.
It was more so, I was like, is that fucking Starro?
Just, again, it's a love letter. So if you haven't, 13 episodes of this half season are out. You should definitely go check them out on DC Universe. I think it's well worth the money, especially I've been going back watching through the back catalog of animated films. I watched Gotham by Gaslight recently. So good. And it's actually way different than the
graphic novel.
The graphic novel by Mignola and I think John Byrne? I don't know. But that's a really interesting twist on it. Death of Superman's coming to it.
Reign of Superman.
Yeah.
Because I think
Death is already out. Yeah. And then
Rain's out on digital, just not on DC Universe yet.
Yeah. It's so good. Definitely worth the $70, I feel.
For the year. So
much. Okay. That's everything I got.
Yeah, there's only one thing left. Him Tusky has returned to the form that you can also write into at zchupodcast.com/comment.
Ooh. Oh, wait. Just Death of a Superman still. Never mind.
And he says two things. One, he gives us more history of the Great Kentucky Derby incident. The Tootsie Roll Pop Al was an early ringleader in the non-Sapien uprising.
But how many licks did it take?
We'll have to find out. But then he also...
How many deaths did it take to start a world war?
I guess this is more...
One, two, a three.
But I guess this is more a question for you, Steve, since you probably are the expert on this. Who would win in a fight, Sora or Tidus?
What power level are we talking here? Are we talking like...
Let's say max level for both.
Sora. Sora took a weapon that is not sharp, that bludgeons the Heartless to death, and sliced through, I think, 10 buildings in one swipe. And that's in base form. We're not even talking Valor form where he gets stronger, or Wisdom form where he gets magic... Or even final form, where he literally floats around and controls two Keyblades with his mind and gets his ultimate magic. Tidus ain't got shit. He can kick a ball at him. I can kick a ball and swing a sword.
So what
with
you're an saying ultima blade. Is that if they were going in Blitzball, Tidus would win.
Blitzball, yes. But if we're talking like a straight, like, put them in
like
a
Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Super, Tournament of Power...
And like they're just like put them in a field.
Is that what it was called? Tournament of Power?
Yeah.
Okay.
But like full power, Sora wins hands down. Because again, why don't you take a baseball bat and slice through a skyscraper with it?
He also has friendship, motherfucker.
Tidus has that too. But again, baseball bat, skyscraper, do that 10 times in one swipe.
Also, to throw this in, Sora has summons and Tidus doesn't control the summons in his game.
Let's leave summons out of it, because when you
use max power,
when you use the summons, you need Donald and Goofy there. You need to use their power to bring the summon out.
But if you get you a Jimbo and you pay max gold,
then you're cheating because you have an extra person with Yuna on the sidelines.
Yeah. I was about to say I would love to have a game where all the Final Fantasy protagonists fight, and
Dissidia.
That game exists already.
Dissidia.
There's three of them.
Yeah, it's great. I haven't played any since the first one.
I played all of them. NT was kind of a letdown because you have to play either through like the survival mode or online to get tokens to buy the story mode.
Oh, that sucks.
Because I wanted to play the story mode because the story mode is the best part of Dissidia. And like,
the best part of any fighting game.
It's like, but you don't have the tokens to go past chapter one. Like, the fuck are these tokens?
That is a pretty BS system.
It's not as bad as, was it Metal Gear Survive? Yeah, pay $9.99 to get a second save slot.
Yeah, that one is pretty bad.
Shout out to you, Konami. Did you see someone recreated all of PT and in Dreams?
Yes, I've told you about that.
Sorry.
Someone also created all of Dead Space, I think, in Dreams.
Steve, insane. You might like this last thing. Someone is recreating all of Legend of Zelda in the Doom
field. Oh, Unreal 4.
Are we talking OG Zelda?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, they're rebuilding with Unreal 4. It looks pretty fucking impressive. Yes.
The true test, though, is if they put all of the secrets in the exact same spots. Like, if you were to...
Oh, I'm not even talking about that one. I'm talking about the OG Doom game modded to look like Legend of Zelda. From the original Nintendo games.
What? Wait, so Doom in Zelda?
No.
Zelda in Doom. Okay.
And it's the really cheap graphics. It's all in first person. You have your sword and shield, and you have to go against everyone.
I've seen the Ocarina in the Unreal Engine, and if they ever finish it, I hope Nintendo's like, hey, let's partner and release this shit, because... Oh my god, I would love to replay Ocarina in Unreal Engine.
You hope they don't do their standard thing of like, nope, can't do that. He didn't approve this.
I think Nintendo's becoming a little more lax about
it. They're starting to change their ways a bit, I think. They're evolving. Slowly.
Oh my fucking god. Nintendo, talk to these people.
It's Legend of Zelda
Doom.
Oh
my god, that's amazing.
Again, if they have all the secrets in the same spot, fuck yeah.
Okay, but that's everything.
Yeah.
Anyone else?
Nope, that was it.
All right. Fourth microphone. Nothing. All right. Cool. Well, thank you guys for listening to a brand new episode of the ZT Podcast, where three friends come around this table to talk to you for your amusement. If you like that, head over to major podcasting services around the world. Leave us a review. Leave us a rating. Subscribe to us. 150
episodes.
Yeah, we should have planned in advance and did something special. Hey, can someone make a clip show for us for episode 200?
Well, no, the real celebration comes in 6 episodes.
Is that your anniversary?
That'll be 3 years, the Z2 podcast.
Shit.
52 times
3. End it. Yep. Rebrand. Start the 0.5 episodes back up again.
But hey, 150 episodes, I'm still not in a logo.
Our friend is busy. She's illustrating a children's book. Shout out to you, Rachel. Love you to death. You're the best. Have fun canceling your DC Universe subscription.
Until June.
Until June.
Game of Thrones style.
God, what are we going to watch now?
We'll find something.
I said we got to go through K-On.
Should we get back to, life. You know, the deal we made?
Yeah,
Steve needs to finish Modica. Then we need to do either Gurren Lagann or Cowboy Bebop.
I said Gurren Lagann. Just finally make it happen.
Yeah,
like Little Witch Academia.
I think Zach needs to understand
your expectations
where modern day trigger comes from.
You need to fully understand where the drill that will pierce the heavens comes from.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've seen enough Watch Mojo videos that everything.
And just
been
who
spoiled.
The hell do you think I am?
No, you don't even understand the weight of it.
Okay, so leave us a review, subscribe to us because that helps us get in the algorithm and gets us a little more popular. You can leave us comments on Facebook, Twitter, or
z2podcast.com/comment.
And we'll always read those live and air. Also, fun fact, not really a fun fact, you should go over to Facebook, go find our friend Brendan Kreese. he's been selling a ton of art. He just had his second baby, and he's a fantastic artist. So you should go check him out. You should also check out Aggravated Art on Facebook. He's pretty neat. And you should go to Hall of Justice Comics, where we get all of our valuable comics from. Cool. I think that's everything. We done?
Yep.
All right, I gotta leave.
Happy birthday, Jim.
Love you, internet. Bye.